Tabate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 8. Then Narayana Kavacha Shield, Text 19. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. May the personality of Godhead in His incarnation as Vyasa Deva protect me from all kinds of ignorance resulting from the absence of Vedic knowledge. May Lord Buddhadev protect me from activities opposed to Vedic principles and from laziness that causes one to madly forget the Vedic principles of knowledge and ritualistic action. May Kalki Deva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared as an incarnation to protect religious principles, protect me from the dirt of the age of Kali. Purport. This verse mentions various incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who appear for various purposes. Srila Vyasadeva, Mahamuni, compiled the Vedic literature for the benefit of all human society. If one wants to be protected from the reactions of ignorance, even in this age of Kali, one may consult the books left by Srila Vyasadeva, namely the four Vedas, Sama, Yajur, Rig, and Atharva, the 108 Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Brahma Sutra, Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahapurana, Vyasadeva's commentary on the Brahma Sutra, and the other 17 Puranas. Only by the mercy of Srila Vyasadeva do we have so many volumes of transcendental knowledge to save us from the clutches of ignorance. As described by Srila Jayadeva Goswami in his Dashavatara Stotra, Lord Buddha apparently decried the Vedic knowledge. Nindasi yagya vidheraha shuti jatam, sadaya hridaya darshita pashughatam, keshava dhrita buddha sharira jaya jagadisha hare. The mission of Lord Buddha was to save people from the abominable activity of animal killing and to save the poor animals from being unnecessarily killed. When Pashandis were cheating by killing animals on the plea of sacrificing them in Vedic yagyas, the Lord said, if the Vedic injunctions allow animal killing, I do not accept the Vedic principles. Thus he actually saved people who acted according to Vedic principles. One should therefore surrender to Lord Buddha so that he can help one avoid misusing the injunctions of the Vedas. The Kalki Avatara is the fierce incarnation who vanquishes the class of the atheists born in this age of Kali. Now in the beginning of Kali Yuga, many irreligious principles are in effect. And as Kali Yuga advances, many pseudo-religious principles will certainly be introduced and people will forget the real religious principles enunciated by Lord Krishna before the beginning of Kali Yuga, namely principles of surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Unfortunately, because of Kali Yuga, foolish people do not surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. Even most people who claim to belong to the Vedic system of religion are actually opposed to the Vedic principles. Every day they manufacture a new type of dharma on the plea that whatever one manufactures is also a path of liberation. Atheistic men generally say, Joto mot toto pot. According to this view, there are hundreds and thousands of different opinions in human society, and each opinion is a valid religious principle. This philosophy of rascals has killed the religious principles mentioned in the Vedas, and such philosophies will become increasingly influential as Kali Yuga progresses. In the last stage of Kali Yuga, Kalki Dev, the fierce incarnation of Keshava, will descend to kill all the atheists and will save only the devotees of the Lord. The three avatars of Vishnu being supplicated in this verse are all particularly connected with Kali Yuga. Vyasadeva appears at the end of Dwaraka Yuga to divide, edit, and present in written form the Veda for the benefit of people of Kali Yuga who are stupid. Although to study Vyasadeva's works requires much intelligence, it seems, even to enter them, it is required that one learn Sanskrit. That's generally the qualification, which requires a higher level of intelligence than the normal person in Kali Yuga has. So the Shastras were like this. The Veda was divided by Vyasadeva and presented for less intelligent people of Kali Yuga. But even then it takes the most intelligent people of Kali Yuga even to take an interest in that. And those who do, as we see from this verse, many of them in the beginning of Kali Yuga, even though they superficially subscribe to the Vedic principles, they mangle the import so badly, or the purpose so badly, that Lord Buddha appeared to deal with the problem in a radical manner. The problem that the Vedic principles were being misused for the purpose of indiscriminate animal slaughter. And therefore Buddhadev appeared and said, well, if the Vedas sanction indiscriminate animal slaughter, then clearly the Vedas are to be rejected. But actually, for those who are followers of Vyasadeva, actual followers, Lord Buddha's teachings are to be rejected, because he rejects Vyasadeva. There was a conversation Srila Prabhupada had with the famous among the followers of Srila Prabhupada, or infamous, Dr. Patel, who would often accompany Srila Prabhupada on morning walks in Bombay. And Dr. Patel would bring up, he had a very good repertoire of all kinds of objections to anything Srila Prabhupada might say. He was quite intelligent in that regard, and Srila Prabhupada seemed to relish sparring with him, philosophical sparring. So one time, this Dr. Patel brought up the subject of the Swaminarayan Sampradaya and their adherence to the principle of ahimsa, non-violence, and not meat-eating. He said that was a good thing they introduced. But Srila Prabhupada said, well, meat-eating in and of itself is not forbidden in the Vedic Shastra. There is allowance for that. And then Dr. Patel, he said, well, in that case, I don't accept the Vedas. And Prabhupada said, then you're totally rigid. Dr. Patel was so adamant that there should be no meat-eating that Prabhupada said that then you're a Gnostica. You're outside the Vedic fold. It is allowed. You can't deny that it's allowed in Shastra under certain conditions. We as Vaishnavas don't partake in that, although some Vaishnavas in previous yugas, and at least one Vaishnava, there he is up there, Garuda, he's a meat eater. So, he's meat, right? At least one that we can think of. So, Buddhadev, he rejected the Vedic principle, saying meat eating cannot be accepted. This indiscriminate killing of animals, if that is allowed in the Vedas, then we don't accept the Vedas at all. Now, interestingly, in this verse, the prayer is to Lord Buddha to protect me from activities opposed to the Vedic principles. Although Buddha, his avatar, was to introduce activities opposed to the Vedic principles. And from to pray to Lord Buddha to protect us from laziness that causes one to madly forget the Vedic principles of knowledge and ritualistic action. So the very things that Lord Buddha superficially came to oppose, we're enjoined to pray to him so that we don't be victimized by that. It's like praying to Lord Buddha, please bless me so that I don't follow your teachings. That's what the prayer is. Because Lord Buddha, actually, if we are to properly understand him, then what his teachings are was not his purpose. That was only temporarily to shift. That was his teachings are not for the eternal welfare of people, but to take people from a bad, a very wrong platform to a somewhat better one. And particularly, as Jayadev Goswami says, sadaya hridaya darshita pashughatam, to save the animals out of his kindness, to save the animals who are being slaughtered. So this is often mystifying when we say this to people, how Buddha, we accept him as an avatar, but if anyone follows his teachings, they're rejected. They're atheists. According to the Vedic principles, when they're being strictly followed, they are asambhasha. They're not even fit to be spoken with. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he met Buddhists, he met so many different kinds of people in South India when he was traveling there, and he discussed philosophy with them and convinced them on the basis of Vedic knowledge and also by the attraction of his beauty and the attraction of his prema sankirtan. So many people were attracted to Lord Chaitanya. But the Buddhists, when he came in contact with the Buddhists, it's stated there in Chaitanya Charitamrita that they're not even fit to be spoken with. If they don't accept the Vedas, they're not even fit to be spoken with. Then the question comes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said, Priti vite ache jato nagaradigram sabhatra pracha hoibe moranam, that my name will be preached in every town and village of all over the world. So how can that be preached? They're preaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's name, that must be established on the basis of the Vedic teachings. Otherwise, if we simply say to everyone chant Hare Krishna, but no philosophical understanding behind that, then that chanting of Hare Krishna, people may take to it. But one cannot actually take to the pure chanting of the holy names of Krishna unless one is trained in Vedic knowledge. Because if one doesn't know what the Vedic Siddhanta is, then he must commit offenses against the holy name. Because the offenses, what are the offenses? To consider demigods to be equal to or independent of Vishnu. So to understand this, to consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to be like some karma kandya, ritualistic activities for generating auspiciousness for material enjoyment. If one considers the chanting of the holy names of Vishnu to be like that, then one becomes an offender to the holy name, and the actual result of chanting the holy names of Krishna will not manifest in their heart, because Taramadhe Sarva Sreshta Nama Sankita Niraparadhe Nama Loile Pai Premadhan. Although the chanting of the holy names of Krishna is the best of all activities of bhakti, it has the holy name, the chanting of the holy name has to be undertaken without offenses. By doing so only can one achieve the actual result of chanting Hare Krishna, which is prema dhan, the treasure of pure love of Krishna. So, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that my name will be preached all over the world, that presupposes that the Vedic knowledge must be preached also. So how are you going to do that if you can't speak to the people? Just like the Buddhists, they are asambhasha. They should not be spoken with because of their offense of not accepting the Vedas. They should not be spoken with by civilized people. Civilized people means those who accept the Vedas. So if one doesn't accept that, then how can there be any philosophical discussion? How can there be any discussion of reality unless one accepts the principle of Veda as being axiomatically correct? Then immediately we come to the platform of asatyam apratishtam te jagadahura nishwaram. We come to the platform of thinking that there's no actual basis to reality, there's no actual underlying truth. By not accepting the Vedas, which are the eternal record of the nature of reality, then we don't accept that there is any fixed reality, and then everything is all philosophy, as we see in what's considered philosophy in the modern world, is simply different people's ideas generated from their experiences and their thought patterns developed on the basis of learning other people's ideas and thought patterns, but without any clear direction, without any basis. So such discussion, by its nature, has to be like that of a dog trying to catch its tail. It just goes round and round and round, and there's no question of him ever reaching it. Because there is no basis, there is no connection with the reality, which is given in the Veda, and simply manoratam, one wanders on the chariot of one's mind, in illusion. The very nature of this world is that we take to be real that which is unreal or insubstantial. So how is Krishna consciousness going to be preached in the world among such people? Therefore, it's not such an easy task to convince people of this, what we call philosophy, although the word philosophy as it's used in English is actually something, the term which is used, or the various terms used in Sanskrit, darshan, or tattva-jnana, various words based on tattva, tattva-darshan, but it's a completely different approach, which basically that's called avarohana panta and arohana panta, the descending process and the ascending process. One process is to accept that there is a fixed reality which we can submit to, and by the mercy of those of that reality and of those who are in contact with that reality, by their mercy, that knowledge can descend upon us. And we can be enlightened by that. And another process is to think, well, I'm here. So, okay, I can see this, I can see that. Where do we go from here? And beginning from that, to construct by observing the world and making various theories, to make various deductions and come up with various worldviews and philosophical systems, which cannot possibly lead us to the truth, because by the very nature, the material energy, the material intelligence is limited and defective. So it's a hopeless task. It's a valiant, you might say, valiantly charging into oblivion. There's no hope of even going in the right direction. So, how is Krishna consciousness to be preached all over the world in such a circumstance? Well, it's very helpful if it can be established that the Vedic principles, the Vedic knowledge, Vyasadeva is to be accepted. When people accept that, then it becomes a lot easier to, just like we see everyone sitting here, I presume, accepts as an axiom that the Srimad, you've all taken the trouble to come here on a midweek morning, and many of you have been here since 4:30, so you're convinced, is it not, of the importance of the process of Krishna consciousness. You've dedicated your lives around this principle. You accept Srimad Bhagavatam as knowledge that we require to imbibe. So ultimately we have to bring people to that level. That means the level of, they are devotees. But until people come to that level, and most of Los Angeles still has a long way to go, most of the people here, then the preaching of Krishna consciousness has to, well, we could say in one sense we could say that the whole preaching of Krishna consciousness, until people accept this principle that we should accept the Vedic knowledge specifically as it's presented in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita by Srila Prabhupada, until people come to that level, then our whole endeavor is to bring people to that level. So there are various means for doing that. Generally, it's not simply philosophically. Purification is also required. So actually, for many people who come at first, we don't even ask them to accept the Vedic knowledge. Or please chant Hare Krishna. Please take some prasada. If they're very fortunate, please come to the temple, or sometimes Jagannath goes outside his temple and people see him and they think, this is fun, this is nice. But that is purifying. Indirectly, by taking Krishna prasadam, they are accepting the Vedic principle of honoring the prasadam offered to Lord Jagannath. So, we may, having come to this position of having faith in the Vedic principles, an extremely fortunate position, an unlikely position for people raised in, those of us who are raised in the Western world, outside the Vedic culture, we may also pray, protect me from activities opposed to Vedic principles, because we see that many who do take to Krishna consciousness, they come all the way from being an American to being a follower of the, or being an average American to being a follower of the Vedic principles. But then due to the influence of Maya, they fall back again into activities opposed to Vedic principles and forget the Vedic principles of knowledge and ritualistic action. So we may pray to Lord Buddhadev, as the prayer is here, that we not fall into that ignorance. May we always maintain faith in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita as it is, and not forget the Vedic principles, not think that, well, as Srila Prabhupada notes here in the purport, the jato mot toto pot, there are so many philosophies, so they're all good and they all have their value, and they're all, whatever you feel is good for you, find your own path, choose your own path. So this kind of thinking is popular in the modern age. It's actually an excuse to appear to be philosophical and spiritual without the discipline and surrender that is required, and fixation on the actual Siddhanta and understanding all the tremendous effort and surrender and dedication and determination that is required for advancement, for actual spiritual advancement, just that one feels, yes, I'm feeling spiritual, with no actual direction, with no dedication or surrender. So, this is laziness, simply laziness. I'm feeling spiritual. Today I'm feeling very spiritual. But there's no, there's no actual following of principles, no getting up early in the morning, or you might do out of whim sometimes, then another day not do. Laziness, not attempting to understand what is the actual philosophy of life given in Shastra. We are enjoined, Siddhanta bale achite na karaha alash, eha hoite krishne lage shurira manosh. That one should not be lazy in the matter of understanding the Siddhanta, the proper perspective on the Vedic knowledge, because by applying one's mind to understand these points, that means applying one's mind doesn't mean on the wild manoratam, that the chariot is simply running behind one's senses, but the chariot of one's mind should be, one should accept as the driver and the person giving directions, the bona fide spiritual master who can direct us properly, and then apply one's mind to understand this Siddhanta. And if we don't do that, then Siddhanta alashchan anartha charena. We'll not be able, if we're lazy in the matter of trying to understand what Vyasadeva has given us, then we won't be able to overcome anarthas, or those dirty scars in the heart which prevent us from, or prevent the arising of actual love of Krishna in our heart. And then we become candidates for the third incarnation mentioned here, Kalkidev. So, better we surrender to Vyasadev, not be bewildered by Buddhadev, and not become candidates for the sword of Kalkidev. And 8:15, is it? That's it. Okay. Hare Krishna. All over. It's all over. There's an authorized hand, an honorable hand rising there. So if Archit Prabhu raised his hand, I guess I can take his question. Yes. So-called followers of the Vedas.
It's very important to get the Vedic knowledge from the right source. Otherwise, they're so-called followers of the Vedas in India today, but they're actually, like you said, they're bringing in bad influences in the name of Vedic following.
Yes.
I thought maybe you'd like to say something on that.
So-called followers of the Vedas. Yeah, well, that could be understood as Hindu society in general. Srila Prabhupada says here, every day they manufacture a new type of dharma. So that's prominent in India today, that people, all kinds of things we see. So, Sahaja Yoga, and then even without any, this over here in California, there's some, what does he call it? Kriya Yoga, his own invention of what they call Kriya Yoga. And then we have, more recently, Hugging Yoga. She comes here also? Hugging Yoga. Recently, the wheelchair Bhagawan passed away. He benedicted the world by leaving it. to visit Yamaraj. So this, actually, all the Hindu dharma, as it's called, has its roots in Vedic culture, but it's gone so far away. It's actually become, in many ways, very sinful, just like that wheelchair Bhagavan. At his place, there's a whole culture going on which seems to be Vedic culture. There's aartis and fire sacrifices and chanting of Vedic hymns, but it was all centered on him. And so he misappropriated all that culture, which is meant for glorifying the actual Bhagavan, and allowed it to be centered on him. And it's so sinful that just like this, there may be many like this, but at least I know this. There's a famous prayer in South India for Balaji, Venkatesh, this at Tirumala. So what is that? What does it go? Tava Suprabhatam. The Suprabhatam, the waking up prayer in the morning. I just can't remember. Yeah, anyway, the prayer is to Venkatesh, the deity. And they give all the prayers but substituted his name. Isn't that extremely sinful? So it appears to be like the Vedic culture, but it's actually very sinful. Just like from our generation, we might remember there was an album of Jimi Hendrix with the picture of the Vishvarupa. But instead of Krishna's head at the front, there was that rascal's head on the front. So this is appropriation of the Vedic culture for one's own sense gratification. People are so much attracted. Recently in India there was a TV serial which popularized the already highly popular original Sai Baba. So all over India, people are so much into this. He was actually a Muslim fakir. And everywhere you'll find temples of this Sai Baba going up everywhere. And everything appears to be like the Vedic dharma, but it's without Siddhanta. It's focused on someone who is clearly not Bhagavan. And therefore, in the name of Vedic culture, it's very sinful. It's something like Hiranyakashipu. He insisted that everyone worship, now you worship me, Vena. You worship me. So they became very sinful. Yeah, please.
About the Buddha.
We talk so much about the Buddha. Who teaches you so much about the Buddha?
You did.
Who does?
You did.
Oh, I did just now. Well, not that much.
But I was wondering, what would you possibly know what the so-called, when the Buddhists reach their highest attainment, it's called supposedly no self and it's beyond consciousness.
There's no such thing as no self. There's nothing beyond consciousness.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, what's their destination after this lifetime?
What's their destination? Well, in one place Srila Prabhupada says that they merge into the water of the Karana ocean. In one place he said that. In other places that they become stones.
They is that possible? Like,
yeah, exactly. Living beings can enter into stones. Stones, they can also, they're also living stones, for your information. Some stones grow. Some mountains, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, used to fly with wings. Does that fall in the category of no? That's different to the water speaks. So yeah, because their aim is to become without consciousness, therefore they enter into a situation which is practically without consciousness. You get what you want. Why do they regard it as so blissful? Because they're so sinful that they think if they're in a situation where they can't think about Krishna, that's the best possible situation they could be in. As long as I'm thinking, I could think of Krishna, so let me not think. Then there's no possibility of thinking of Krishna. Don't worry too much about their psychology. Just don't do it, that's all. Better. There's no need to worry so much about what they're thinking and how they're doing. I mean, there's so you could study the dogs. Why do they slaver like this Pavlov? He was studying, but we don't need to study all that. It just basically, here is Krishna consciousness. That is Maya. Observe the various principles of Maya. We don't have to get into the details. It's not required. Better not to. Don't become fascinated by Maya. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Dwaringari Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.